I mentioned it. It was zapping me. And I had a feeling that wasn't what a Blue Yeti is supposed to do.
I'm pretty sure it's not supposed to be an improv Tesla coil.
Dude, the Blue Yeti zaps you when it starts up.
Is that why Winston in the hit video game Overwatch zaps you and has a Yeti skin?
Holy really shit!
Yes, that's why.
Really makes you ponder.
Really makes you think.
But anyway, I had my landlord come over and look at my outlets because they said that they were grounded. And I was like, okay, they probably wouldn't lie about that because if I'm using a two-prong outlet as a three-prong one, that can light the carpet on fire and kill everyone in this fucking apartment. So they obviously wouldn't cheap out on that. And so they cheaped out on it and they didn't ground it. And when they came by to look at it, I had a book I ordered from Amazon. My brother, Zach, my older brother, who's like an actual adult and like works a real job, got me an Amazon card for my birthday. And I spent it on a mic stand and manga called My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness. And it was sitting right on my desk the entire time. It's got naked anime titties right on the cover.
Except that's really, you're mischaracterizing that manga because it's not actually like...
It's not like anime titties.
It's actually more depressing.
The only way that the landlord walking in on that stuff could have been worse is if you found it put back into your bookshelf.
I also had my Make America Great Again hat. Oof. I usually hide that. I had it sitting on my Build-A-Bear Workshop Shrek that I have over my bed.
Why don't I doubt that statement at all?
Yeah, I don't doubt that statement.
Like, nothing about that strikes me as strange. Like, yeah, Tad probably went to a fucking Build-A-Bear at one point and got a fucking Shrek. Doesn't surprise me. I believe you.
I have D&D clothes. I have a Stewie Griffin Snuggie that has a bunch of really funny quotes.
These things are surprising to me. You know what would be surprising? It would be surprising if you were like, God, I don't even know what you could do that could surprise me at this fucking point.
Right, because the thing is that we know Ted very well. We've known him for a very long time. And that leads into the actual episode, which is, like we were talking about last time, know the people that you're actually playing with. The reason why we trust Ted to do some of the things he does in-game is because we know him really well. If somebody just rolled up and said to me some of the things that Ted has said over the years, I would run.
We should have run.
What did you say the first time you saw me in person? You offered me, what, a spicy mango Mountain Dew?
Yes.
I said, what's up, you meme... No, you said, what's up, you meme-loving fucks. I said, hey, what's going on? You want a spicy mango Mountain Dew?
Right? Anyway, last time we talked about how to get...
No. You gotta do, hey, Tad.
What? Oh, no, we don't. Sake. We do not. Shut up. Shut up. Fuck you. No. But last time, what we did was showed you how to get a game running, right?
Yes.
This time, we're gonna tell you... whoever is running the game, and you, the people playing in the game, about the different types of players and the different types of problem players and how to address these problems. Basically, once you start playing with any group of any reasonable size, you're going to notice that people start falling into archetypes. And this is common across pretty much all tabletop games. All tabletop role-playing games, across board games, things like that, people tend to fall into one of these archetypes or a mixture of them that really lets you know how they like to play and what they value.
Yes.
So, specific to role-playing games, there are a couple that we'll just list first and give you a little info about what they are. The first and probably most common that people complain about is the Munchkin, aka the Power Gamer.
Yes.
Now, this guy is the guy who owns every book, has read the rules front to back, and comes to the game with a broken piece of shit character that is exclusively designed to exploit the rules to do crazy shit. Right? Now, sometimes this can be fine, actually. Sometimes this can even be cool if they're just doing it to, like, make a loophole around it, like, get around something or just do a shit ton of damage, but it's not really practical in any other way. Like, if they're being fun with it, then it's fine. But if they're making it so that it invalidates everybody else, it's not fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they're trying to do the what's the combo with the celestial whale? It's something like you there's like some dumb thing where you can summon a celestial whale at a really low level above someone and just drop it on them and deal like 128 d12.
Yeah, you're talking about in 3-5, but that actually just doesn't work because you can't summon things in an area that they wouldn't that they would instantly die in. And no, then the- you can rules lawyer, oh, but like whales technically can breathe air, but fuck you.
The ultimate munchkin.
And then you get into a whole fucking thing.
Is taking advantage of the fact that rounds last, what, like 6 seconds?
6 seconds.
And then actions taken within the round are technically instantaneous, so you build a peasant railgun.
Yes, yes, the peasant railgun. If you're interested, please just look it up. It doesn't actually work by the rules in D&D 3.5, but whatever.
But that's not the point. The point is that it doesn't work by the rules, because a lot of times Munchkin stuff doesn't work by the rules, but it works by a very narrow interpretation of the rules that they will argue with you for hours about.
Yes, Munchkins very often overlap with the next group, which is the rules lawyers.
Yes.
These guys might not min-max everything to the same level as the Munchkin. They might not make characters that are as broken as anybody else, but God forbid anybody break the rules ever.
Oh, they're, I believe we had someone by the name of Kenny.
Mother a bit of a fucker. Lawyer. Yes.
There's a difference between a rules lawyer and someone who knows the rules. Never confuse somebody who knows the rules for a rules lawyer. Like, if a DM genuinely makes a mistake and somebody's like, hey man, actually the rules say this, that's not rules lawyering.
Right.
A rules lawyer is somebody who's... Okay, a rules lawyer is in that way, 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 way back when we were playing 3.5 for the first 5. Time.
Yeah.
And I wanted to flavor text my astral hand grabbing an electric rat thing so I could hit it with a crossbow. I wanted to flavor text mage hand grabbing an astral rat thing, an electric rat thing, so I could hit it with a crossbow, and it's like, well, no, you already used it. You can't actually grab things. So it's just flavor text. No, you can't do it. That's rules lawyer.
Right. Rules lawyers are the guys who are going to stick to the letter of the rules, regardless of context, regardless of situation, and regardless of what the DM says. These guys are the enemy for people who want to house rule things. And yes. If you think that you have one of these players in your game, you need to be very, very clear with, no, I know that that's not what the rules say, but we're house ruling it, right? Yes. Like, we have a decent amount of house rules, such as, for example, if somebody was a real rules lawyer and they were listening to Revival, they would notice that when you do a burst or a blast in 4E, you're supposed to roll an attack roll on each creature in the burst or blast individually. We just take one roll and apply it to all because it's way faster.
Not only is it way faster, it just makes more sense.
Also, it's like, it technically is a bit of a buff for those burst and blast abilities, but I value the speed over the, you know, gameplay balance.
Not only do I value the speed, but I also value the flavor in that if I'm using something that's like an explosion or something that's an area of effect, you can literally, as with the rules as they're written, you can have you can have the guy dead center of the explosion miss, like not get hit, and then everyone around him get hit, and then
crit the guy on the outskirts, you know?
Yeah, it ends up being really wonky and like not fun.
Right. And that's really the thing. The problem with the rules lawyer isn't when they know the rules and they're like, oh, no, that isn't how this skill check works, or, oh yeah, this ability works this way, you're using it wrong. That isn't the problem. The problem comes in when they make things unfun by doing that. The next guys up are the people who are the next archetype. This isn't really a problem. This is just, you know, like character. These are player archetypes, which is the roleplay fanatics. These are you guys who want to make a character. They want to play that character and they want to be in character all the time. They love that shit, right? These are the guys who will, if you let them, spend 3 hours talking to somebody just in character about, like, a weird rat that they saw. Because they just love playing their character. They love making cool stories with their character. But this can spill over into, for fuck's sake, dude, you don't need to spend 3 hours talking to somebody about a rat.
No, I have gray eyes.
Yeah.
The problem with these people, so most of these things are not problems in and of themselves. Like, you need to know the rules. You need to be able to roleplay. But any of them taken to the extreme can be a problem.
Right. The munchkin is just the guy who really likes the game mechanics. The roleplay fanatic is the person who likes the social aspect. And yeah. Then we've got the roleplay fanatic spelled with two L's.
Ah, yes.
Which is...
Oh, jeez.
These are the guys who want to... They don't... Like, they might not have the most min-max character or anything, but they want combat, they want it hard and fast. Whatever the main source of action in the game is, that's what they want to be doing. You know? These are the guys who are just itching to start rolling dice because they just love... They love the game aspect of the game.
Yeah, if they're not dealing damage, they're mm-hmm. basically not playing.
Right. They make the characters that do the most things mechanically, and then they want to go out and do mechanical things. Like, you ask this person to, like, a lot of times you ask the person who likes this stuff to, you know, like, talk to somebody, and they're like, okay, I rolled diplomacy. 18. Okay, what does he say to me? They won't say shit in character, right?
These, yeah.
That sort of thing. They want to roll dice. That's, you know, they want to use their character skills, and they aren't too keen on flavoring them. And these guys are not always a problem, and in fact can even be great if their character is set up to be that way. If you have, for example, if you have one of these guys, probably don't make him the bard.
Yeah.
There's nothing explicitly wrong, I guess, about the role player if that's what your group wants to do.
Right.
Like, if your game is set up and you're just like, hey, you know, we're essentially playing, you know, Warhammer without $700 armies. We're just doing, you know, grid-based combat. We're doing all pew, pew, pow, pow, go fight the Lich. Like, if that's what you guys want to do, that's perfectly fine. You're completely entitled to do that.
People facilitate the game to work with them. Like, they're the guys who aren't always going to be, you know, role-playing and doing things great, but a lot of times they can surprise you with, you know, cool actions or cool things that are in character. You know, but it's much more infrequent than the other players.
So I think that the biggest source of problems for these players normally doesn't it's not from the players themselves, except in a few of the later cases that we'll cover, where the players are absolutely the problem. But a lot of these are trust me, there are a lot of DMs who are like, oh god, my players suck. They're
very woe is me.
They're like, oh, my players are so stupid. They keep doing XYZ. I don't like it. Like, a lot of times, if you have a role player and you're upset with them, it's your fault as a DM for not setting up the game the right way.
Right. Like, for example, if you have that guy who's the role player, the combat fanatic, you don't want to thrust the party into a situation where you have where like they're the character that needs to take the in-character initiative or else everything falls apart, right?
Yeah, so like a lot of times DMs will try to quote-unquote fix their problem players by doing things that the problem players don't like. Like, if they have a role player, somebody who wants to be rolling dice and dealing damage and stuff, they'll keep thrusting them into, like, conversations and things where they have to talk to try and get them to, like, you know, stop being such a role player. But that just makes the player more upset and makes them not want to be a part of the game and leads to player revolt.
Right. So the next one that is less of a revolt and more of a meh is the guy who is barely even playing. He's the guy who shows up.
Hang on. No, what? I got a text. I got to check real quick.
Oh, you mother! Ooh! he actually got me. It's that guy.
I fucking did it, too.
Yeah, it's that guy. The guy who, you know, in the middle of combat, goes out to take a phone call, or sits down and immediately just starts talking about, hey, what sort of pizza do we want to get, guys? the guy who is playing in only the loosest sense of the word. You know, and these guys can be okay sometimes, but it's definitely more of a problem usually, where they're the guy who's there to just hang out, have fun, and the game is the backdrop, right?
Yeah.
And if your entire group is those people, you can have some really fun games. But if everybody else is super invested and there's one guy who isn't, then when you try and involve that character in that, you know, like super deep thing, they're just going to forget details.
Yeah.
Like, they aren't going to remember who characters are. They aren't going to remember where they're at in the story. And it's going to lead to some problems. And this is what we were talking about with you have to make sure that you pick a good group of people to play with. Yes. Because you're if you get a bunch of, you know, improv actors and then put them together with, like, Bobby, who's, you know, just, like, holding, like, six fidget spinners, spinning them away and can barely pay attention to the game in the slightest, people ain't gonna like fidget spinners right. Bobby.
Dude, my next character's gonna be fidget spinners Bobby.
He throws them like shuriken.
I'm sure that joke's been made already, but...
Yeah. So the next archetype is the tactician, the strategist, and this isn't just limited to combat. They're the guy who is constantly thinking out of character about how to do things. You know? They're the person who is thinking about how can we win? They're seeing the game as a puzzle with a win situation, right? They're the guy who is going to come up with a plan and try and get everything to work out for the players as best as possible.
And this is the archetype that I normally fall into and I have to avoid. If you listen to Revival, you'll hear in the background sometimes fists clenching and unclenching as I desperately attempt to not tell people things that they could say to other... Like, when Jerry or Patton is talking to somebody... There a lot of times,
yeah,
like,
Red, ooh, so we ooh, found ooh, a bunch ooh. Of humans
you,
back there.
You could do this thing, and I just have to sit there and go, nope, let them play it. It's their turn.
Right, and that's the thing, is that I also fall into the, you know, this category more than a lot of the others. You know, like, it's probably a mix of the role with an E play fanatic and the tactician, but what this player likes is being creative with how the game actually plays out. They're the guy who's going to come up with some crazy shit about how to circumvent the plot, basically, right?
Yeah.
And this can be, this, you know, like, these characters can be, just like with the roleplay fanatic, they can be your best player or your worst, depending on how well they want to play with the rest of the team.
Yeah.
They could be your angel or your demon.
Right. You know, you can have the guy who comes up with a cool plan and then everybody gets on board, or you can have the guy who's just, hey, I think we should do this. No, 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 you shouldn't be doing that. You should be doing this instead. Hey, that was dumb. You should have done this instead. And meanwhile, they're like Grognak von Stupidface and they got 8 int and they're trying to tell the wizard that his plan is dumb. Yeah.
Also, I hear you tickety-tacking, motherfucker.
I'm sorry. I'm being a thing, but like, oh.
I swear.
Okay, this is... here's a great thing. If this was a D&D game, you could yell at me, but I'm being triggered.
Right, because that's the thing, is that I don't give... If I'm running the game, I don't give a shit. Unless it's an actual emergency or something like that, then yeah, we can stop. But if it's just like, somebody said something on Facebook that you don't like, shut up, put away your phone, let's keep playing. Right? Just like now, shut up, put away your phone, and let's keep recording this podcast.
But someone is wrong about exercise.
So, the next group that you could fall into, if you go through any of these archetypes to the extreme, is that guy.
Yes.
That guy is the most broad of these archetypes, but they're always a dick.
Yes.
Now, they can also just be somebody who's doing this on purpose, where they, you know, they don't like somebody in the group or they have a grudge against somebody and they're just acting out, right?
Basically, any of these archetypes, if they're left alone for long enough, will fester and evolve into some form of that guy.
Right. And oh, that boy. Guy can also fall that into guy. None of these archetypes if they're just saying weird shit all the time or just yes. doing inappropriate weird
oh,
shit.
Oh, God.
You know, that guy is the guy who says weird things like, I'm gonna go walk up to the barkeeper and look at her titties. and that's the end of the thought.
And it's the guy who in the character creator section of the game was like, yeah, I'm gonna make an elf, and he's from a noble family, and he's on a quest to avenge his brother. And then you get to the tavern,
I'm gonna
and he goes,
stick
I'm
my
gonna
dick in this tree.
Yeah, you're like, what the fuck, dude?
Oh yeah, I didn't tell you my secret backstory was that elves all fuck trees.
Yeah, just fuck trees, dude.
Just all day. Well, I don't know what type of elves you're thinking about. So, any of these can then become problem players. And so, stemming off of these, you've got the extreme munchkin.
Yeah.
So, this guy is the guy who has gone beyond being a power gamer and optimizing his character into breaking shit, right? This is the guy who is, if everybody else in the team can do like 10 damage a round usually, this guy has found some exploit to attack 10 times in a round, do 300 damage, and just solos everything, right? Technically, everything that he's doing is allowed in the rules, and there are many ways to break this shit in every game system, including 4E. Like, here's a little tip, a little side tip. If anybody in your game in 4E tries to take feats that deal with frost damage or with cold damage, stop them. There's a lot of ways to cheese that shit for a shit ton of damage in 4E.
I am making a note about frost damage right now.
Right. See, I also fall into this category pretty often where you, like, it is very hard as somebody who likes figuring out optimal stuff. If you find something that is better than every other option, it's very, very, very tempting to just take it every time. But when you get to the point where you're the best, this person is the best character in the group, or if you're the player and you're the best character in the group and nobody else matters, then it's a problem. Because you're just cooler than everybody else, and then you're just the de facto main character. And nobody likes that.
We call it a Guy Humano situation.
No, that was just pure luck. No, that's being the best character by form of having the most interesting story and the most interesting character archetype and stuff, not mechanically. So, mm-hmm. So what you're going to want to do if you're this player or if you're dealing with this player, right, is if you're the DM, like, we'll go with the DM first. If you're the player, just stop being a dick, dude. Like,
yeah. Fuck off.
Let everybody else have their fun, and maybe, just maybe, make a character that does reasonable things that fits into the universe instead of just trying to break everything all the time.
Yeah, generally speaking, those characters are, those people are forgetting the part about the game that it's not just about damage. Like, you're literally killing the game for yourself by doing that, because number one, it breaks immersion. Like, you can't explain in game or in character why you're able to deal all this fucking damage being the person that you are, and it stops the game making sense.
And in 4E specifically, a lot of it keys off of like taking character themes and backstories that give these weird mechanical benefits. So literally, if you want to make one of these optimized characters, you end up being like, I'm like the seventh person to make a drow archer with all of these feats and things. And then you're just like, you might as well just be playing an MMO character.
Yeah.
Like, you have not made a character. You've copied a spreadsheet. So if you're the DM, what you're going to want to do to deal with this sort of person is give them cool shit. Give them cool shit to do.
Yeah.
Like, let them actually vent that let them get to feel smart by picking their super strong bullshit. Like, put them in fights where they can flex. But don't let them make these broken characters. Veto stuff. You can do that. I don't care if it's in the book. It's broken. So we're not going to use it.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell people.
As a DM, you are completely and 100. Now, don't take this the wrong way, because I know there's DMs out there who are going to be like, "Oh, that means I can just tell people how to make their character." You don't be a dick about it, but you can say, like, "Dude, no, you can't take that skill."
Right. Like, for example, if I was playing with people who knew 4E in and out, I would say at the beginning, no frost cheese. None. We are not going to be doing that. Like, we're not going to make characters that abuse frost. If somebody brings me a fucking polearm guy and a team full of people that can do free attacks whenever an enemy gets shifted, I quit. Fuck you. I'm not going to let you guys do 70 attacks in one round. Like, that's not fun for me running the game, because now I'm just, like, having to throw all this absurd nonsense at you to even keep it challenging.
Yeah, there's also a bunch of stuff for, like, items and things where people are like, well, I want to spend my gold on this. And you can very, very easily say, hey, unless you've got a good explanation for where this item came from or how you actually got your hands on it, no, you can't have it.
Right. So, but the way that you can redirect this burning desire for them to want to flex their game knowledge is, let's say that you've got one of those guys who's just kind of there as a role player and they don't really know the game rules all that well. They just want to make a character that, you know, that is functional, but then play their character through playing their character and acting. Tell them to go ask the fucking, to go ask the power gamer for advice on, like, what to stat into and stuff like that.
Yeah, like, encourage the power gamer to help other people who might not know the system as well to pick out better stuff for their character.
Right, because then the power gamer gets to play a powerful character. What you don't want to do is say, no, play a character that's just as good as these people who are just playing for the first time and have built a shit character, right? That's not fun. You don't want to run around with nerf swords, hitting shit when you could be doing cooler things. Let the power gamer flex some of that knowledge and help people make cooler characters, mechanically speaking.
There's also a lot of this comes into DMs being lazy in encounters. Like, it's easy to throw together a very simple encounter that's just based on HP, where you say, you know, I've got 400 HP worth of dudes to toss at these guys. They come straight at him, or maybe they hit him from range, and that's it. Like,
yeah.
Tons of encounters end up just being wars of attrition, where the players
slap
deal
fights.
Yeah, it's just slap fights. Mm. There, every system, 3.5, including 4E, 5E, all of them have ways to get really, really creative with not only terrain, but traps, types of enemies, what the enemies do. And as the DM, you are playing the enemies. So if you just have them attack blindly, they're just going to attack blindly. Like, you can be creative with how you set up encounters.
Right. Even if
I think every encounter we've had in Revival, like, we had one where it was completely black except for lightning flashes that would show up for a little bit.
Yeah,
one where there was, like, rocks flying at us. We had one that was just in a hallway. I don't think we've ever had a combat that was just, like, on a flat plane.
Yeah, I've been trying to avoid those, but the other thing that you can do is, if somebody made, you know, Thrithshaladil, the elf, and he brought like a 200-page backstory of his character, but he doesn't know how to build a character mechanically for shit. What you can do is, if Ethrophlondavlil wants to do some crazy bullshit in combat, you can let him. Like, if they say, I want to swing from the rafters and bring my blade down, you don't have to say, like, okay, so what skill are you using? Because you need to use one, jackass. You can just be like,
this
all right,
why
go
I don't
for
like
it.
3.5.
You can just be like, all right, go for it. Make a couple of skill checks and we'll improv the damage. Like, we'll give you something that seems reasonable. And then, so you can let people do shit like that. And there's even rules, like, there's even rules outlining it in the DMG in 4. And there are rules for it in 3.5, but it's not so much the rule set for 3.5 that pisses me off as it is the air around the player base of 3.5.
Yes. The 3.5 and Pathfinder rant is a video for another day, though.
Yeah. So you can balance out the power gamer with the role player via a good mix of having the power gamer help out the role player make a character that fits more mechanically, and letting the role player get up to the power gamer's, you know, mechanical power level via giving bonuses for role playing well. Like, you know, let him do cool shit.
A lot of these things should be headed off when the game is in its formation, though. Like,
right.
Some of these things are sort of can end up being game killers if you don't fix them before things get weird. Like, if you're not picking up on this as the person organizing the game, like, I'm assuming that you're the person organizing this game at this point, like, or even as a player, you can kind of pick up on this, but, I mean, a lot of this comes down to no D&D is better than bad D&D.
Right.
It really is. Like, if you get pulled into a group and they're like, the DM's like, so you guys go to a brothel, and the other player's like, I pull out my dick. And then you're like, this isn't really the kind of game I want to be in, but I really want to play
D&D. I'm Thrathrathil from the magical forest, and I don't approve of these actions. No, you just leave. You get into your car and go home.
You just leave. You say, hey guys, not into this sort of game. And at the same time, if you go into the game and you're like, I want to pull my dick out, and everyone else is like, yes, welcome to Myths of Thrathrathil.
I have 5 novels that are required reading before we even attempt to venture into my magical world of mystery and wizardry.
and you're just there like, hey, I just want to pull my dick out. Then you should probably leave.
Because there's going to be some guy going, I'm a Thrathrathil, and I'm here, I have my 5 books on my backstory, and they're just going to start jerking each other.
Yeah. Like, you need to find a game that matches the kind of game that you want to play. I'm not saying that the pull your dick out game is horrible and you're a bad person for playing it. I am saying that you're horrible and you're a bad person for playing it. But, you know, if that's not the kind of game you want to play, don't play it.
Leading into a Thrathrathil and their 5 books, you've got the guy who is way too far in character and is way too unreasonable about it.
Hark! Doth I hear a strange mechanical ringing?
Yeah, when somebody's phone rings.
Sounds strange to my ears. What manner of device be this?
God, I hate this guy so much.
So this is the it's what my character would do guy. This is the I made a paladin and I'm going to go arrest the player, like one of the other players, for stealing a loaf of bread guy. This is the I'm a thief, and so 6 months into the campaign, after we find some big artifact, it's enough for my character to retire off of, so I'm just gonna steal it and leave. It's that guy.
Yeah. And This one is generally, I think this one ends up killing more games than anyone else. Really, to me, this is a problem that almost can't be fixed unless you find it really, really far ahead of time.
Right, and the best method of prevention for this one is prevention.
Yeah.
It's going to be very hard to fix it as it goes on, because what it comes down to is usually what happens is this player puts a lot of effort into a character that doesn't fit with the rest of the characters or with the world that we're playing in. Yes. So now they're put in a weird spot where the character they want to play is no longer viable to go along with this group, right? They just aren't.
Yeah.
You know, this is your paladin in your group of like malaligned douchebag murder hobos. This is your malaligned douchebag murder hobo in a group full of paladins. What you do here is you build characters together and you tell people straight up, if your character is not going to play with the rest of the party, tell me and we can make a new character. If your character is going to, like, betray the rest of the party, tell me, they can do that and you can make a new character and go off and chase them. They become an NPC, we move on, right?
Yeah.
But what you can't do is you cannot ruin the game for everybody else.
Yeah, it's one thing I will not ever tolerate is somebody who says and uses the excuse of, well, it's just what my character would do, to actively torpedo a game.
Right. Like, ugh. For example, I had a game that very nearly turned out this way, where one of the players was a... One of the players was this little dragon who was a... like a familiar or like a bound servant of, you know, like this big old elder dragon, right? And their whole hidden goal was to bring back this dead race of dragons, blah, blah, blah. But at a certain point, it turned out that the rest of the party was not on board with this train. We didn't know that that's what they were even trying to do, but we were just talking about it organically and being like, yeah, fuck that shit. We aren't down with that. And at that point, the character should have either been changed in some way, given a way to, like, break out and join us, or retired. Because the problem was is that the character was bound, like, you know, magically, and they couldn't go against the will of their master or whatever, right? But if the rest of the group is now not willing to follow along with their plan, right? Like, the rest of the group is now actively in opposition of their plan. They should have been given some form of out to keep playing the character and join with the party. Or the character should have been retired. You know, things like that, where a lot of times it's a mixture of the player making a character that is too specific and has a lot of ways that they could end up not wanting to be a team player, and the DM putting characters in a situation where they're not going to be a party anymore.
Yeah.
This is why you don't do things like the orc orphan problem.
Yes.
Oh, geez. Go ahead and explain that for those who don't
know. Okay, the orc orphan problem is the fan favorite of DMs who want to challenge their players morally and make an ethical gray situation that they're going to need to work through.
Which is a great way to be an asshole and ruin your game for no reason.
Right, so you raid a camp... You fight a whole war band of orcs and you kill all of them, and then the DM goes, hey, yeah, they're people too, and there's like their orc wives and their orc babies. What do you do? Now, there are plenty of people who go, oh, well, they're evil monsters and whatever, and so we're going to kill all of them and it's justified. And then there are people who go, that's stupid. I'm not doing that. And this almost invariably leads to... either in-game fist fights or out-of-game fist fights, or both.
Yeah, because it's kind of, I don't know, maybe it's kind of hard to separate, like, it's really hard to separate your out-of-game morals from your in-game morals in a situation that involves stabbing children to death.
Right, and this is actually a fairly common way that the it's just what my character would do thing pops up. When somebody makes a character and you don't pick up on, or you don't ask them about, well, what are this character's morals? How does this character feel about these things? Like, this is why you need to talk to everybody and have them hash out characters that are going to work together as a party.
Yeah, here's characters a situation that happens. Fucking often, which is so, and this is sometimes this is a DM's fault, but a lot of times this is a player's fault. It's a DM's fault when they don't pick up on it and when they don't ask, but a lot of times players do this thing, and I don't blame them, because everybody wants to be a cool guy. You want to be like, you want to be a cool nerd, and so you're like, I'm gonna have this thing. And this thing is something that I've kept secret from not only the DM, but also the party. And I'm going to spring it on them at a really cool moment. And it's going to put all the focus on me. And it's going to either freak everybody out, which is cool because now I'm the center of attention. Or it's going to make me look like an awesome badass. Or it's going to define my character. But the important thing here is that you've kept it a secret from everyone, so no one knows what the fuck you're doing.
Lathondriel, the Fetharius, the High Elf, in actuality was Grimtooth Skull Fury, the Dark Elf, Half-Orc, and he was hiding it the whole time.
Haha. What happens is the party's walking down the street, they come to some big town, and there's some elves walking by, and then there's an orc mom and her orc kid, and... the orc kid has one of those oversized lollipops and a nice hat on,
And he's a propeller a great fucking, he's holding a balloon. Propeller head.
Yeah, yeah. He's just, hey, mister. And then for no fucking reason, Thondriel fucking stabs him in the throat and turns to the rest of the party and goes, I never told you guys, but I fucking hate orcs.
Right?
And you're like, dude, what
we
the...
We had something kind of...
You're like, dude, what the fuck?
We had something kind of like this with Patton, where we had the whole Patton, Deva thing.
Yeah.
But, like, I talked about that with Dan beforehand. Me and him knew that.
Yeah, but the DM knew about it.
Right. What we're talking about is situations where even the DM doesn't know. The reason why I was confident in allowing you to have that hidden backstory is because I had everybody build the characters in such a way, and we all built the characters together, that I knew that nobody would actually consider this a deal breaker. It would be massively out of character for anybody's character to go, okay, I can't be in this party anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like... And I knew what your character was, and so I knew it wasn't some dumb bullshit that I needed to veto. So, like, the problem comes in when you're trying to be cool, and you have this hidden information, and you're like, ooh, I'm gonna sneak it out, I'm gonna sneak it out, and everybody's gonna clap, and they're gonna be like, oh man, it's so cool, I didn't know Athondris Facil was such a deep and interesting character, you should write a book, you should write 10 books.
When in actuality, all you've done is forced the DM to go, shit, now I have to deal with this, because you can't just ignore it, and then and then that puts the DM on the spot of, well, fuck, do I allow this to occur, or do I tell him no, or, you know, it's a catch 22, because this is generally when this happens is in the middle of the game. Nobody ever springs this on the first session, and if they do, that's better.
Right, because then you can start planning around it. Or you can say, no, that's dumb and doesn't fit in with the world I've made.
Yeah. The problem is when they spring it, like, you know, 20 sessions into a long-ass campaign. And now, suddenly, all these problems pop up.
So, the other thing is that the bit of advice here for the players is, you think that it'll be cooler if you keep it hidden, but it actually won't. Because...
Yeah.
Like, if you're like, oh, I wanted to be, like, the hidden bastard child of, like, this noble or something like that. If you tell the DM, they can start planning it for you. They can start dropping hints. They can start making things so that this is an important plot point. If you're just laying in wait, waiting to spring it, it's not going to be as cool as if you actually planned it out with the person running the game. Yeah. And the way to fix this as the DM is, if you have one of these players that you know is prone to this sort of thing, the way that you can refunnel this energy is have them go, you know, have them talk with the people who are not as good at building characters, and maybe have them come up with some stuff to help. Like, if they're like, I really want to play this dwarf guy, and he's really into he really likes making really simple robots or something like that. And then you could have the super hard role player guy go like, oh, maybe he's from like a village that, you know, does this as like their thing. And like, hang on here, I'll write some names up and stuff. That's great.
And then bada bing, bada boom, you've got Santa Claus dwarf.
Yes. Right. Like this player can be a great resource to take DM effort off of you by having them. They can start funneling cool ideas to the other players.
The other thing that you can funnel that energy into is one thing that I find a lot of groups don't take as much advantage of as they could is conversations just between the DM and one player. And it can be bad. Like, you definitely don't want to start playing favorites where you keep sending messages or keep talking to one guy away from everybody else. But if you have a player who's prone to springing things on the DM for no reason, give them information that they can hide from the party, or that they can tell the party in secret. You know, let them be the one to spring information. Like, give them a note to find. Give them
because
a message to deliver to the party. Like, instead of just saying, hey, you guys all find this note, send it to that player and let them flavor it, you know?
Yeah, because
let
really
them
what it
be
comes
the one
down
to discover it.
What it comes down to usually for these guys is that they want to tell a story. They feel like they usually feel a little bit constrained as a player, that they don't have enough agency over how the story goes. So instead of acting out via coming up with weird bullshit and immediately declaring it canon, you can give them information that nobody else knows. And you can ask, like, you can, you know, incorporate some of their ideas into the world that you've made and things like that, so that they feel like they're doing something.
Yeah.
What you don't want to do is just tell them, knock it off, everybody, like, you know, you guys are just on rails, I'm not going to take any of your ideas into account, because that player is just going to be bored, because they are not going to want to just be some random face in the crowd. They want to, they have all of these ideas swirling around and they want to use them,
and at worst all of these again will lead to revolt, where that guy's, he's just gonna fucking stab somebody. I mean, that's what it always comes down to for this guy.
Right, because he just wants their character to be important and wants something to happen. They want the spotlight.
Push comes to shove, somebody's getting stabbed.
Yeah.
And they're not gonna tell you why.
In-game or in real life, it don't matter.
So the polar opposite to this guy is hey, so what type of pizza do we want to get, guys? Where are my dice? How does my character work again? I know we've been playing for 2 years, but I don't remember how to cast spells.
Hey, so 20, 25 versus AC, does that hit you?
What's my AC again? Sorry, oh, this is my sheet from 2 weeks ago. Does anybody have my new sheet?
Yeah.
That guy. So...
It's Orc! Whoa, sorry, I had something in my throat.
This is the guy who... You don't really know why they show up. They're showing up because they want to hang out with everybody, but they aren't showing up to play the game. This is the guy who is constantly on his phone, constantly doing other stuff, you know, maybe giving the game like 20% of his attention at any given time. And the biggest problem with this guy is that they often lead to everybody else breaking character. If you're trying to have something like important happen in character, or have something go along, this is the guy who is going to not really pick up on that. This is the guy who, after like a hard fight, and you know, he rolled really low during the fights, somebody's gonna come up to him and go, Dave, because he's not gonna have a good name for his kid. Hey Dave, what the hell?
He's already forgotten everybody's character name.
Yeah. It's like, Dave, what the hell? You almost got us killed back there. You gotta keep it together if we're gonna make it to Grognak's hidden castle. And he responds back, dude, it wasn't my fault. I just rolled like shit.
Yes. Oh, man. See, I'm a person that, like...
Is that in character or was that not in character? You have no idea.
I'm a person who, when I get into character, I like to stay in character. And there's nothing more frustrating for somebody like me playing when somebody responds to my in-character dialogue with an out-of-character quip.
Yeah, like a quip or a joke.
It's so frustrating.
And this often leads to somebody else coming up with a hilarious one-liner that they need to swoosh right in there. And then that just, it just, you fall down the joke cliff.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with playing a funny game, but... The problem is there's a lot of mixes of these kind of characters that can get toxic real fast. Like,
right.
And you have to balance them. Like, as the DM, your job is to make sure that everyone's on the same page, and make sure that, because not everybody's going to be the same kind of player, so you have to balance their creative energies with each other. And that is the most, like, fucking new age sounding bullshit I've ever said.
Right?
You gotta balance their creative energies.
Oh my god, you pretentious
stones out. Jesus Christ.
So, hey bro, you got that J.O. crystal? You charge him up.
Charge. Dude, I need...
Right? 100% heterosexual. So anyway, this guy is often also the guy who is very difficult, who has a very hard time of separating game knowledge and player knowledge. Like, separating player knowledge and character knowledge. This is the guy who doesn't remember what everybody said in character, so he's just going to talk about the game as a whole. There's no separation between, would my character know this, and do I know this?
Yeah. Separating player knowledge from character knowledge is, like, other than, like, read the fucking rule book, is, I think it's the first thing I tell people.
Right.
You have to. You have to.
If you are not there, you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't get to say, oh, I actually saw it through the window. I know all this stuff. No, you weren't there. You didn't say you saw it. You don't know it. Right? Like, two people have a secret little conversation. You don't know it.
Yeah. It's probably the concept people have the most trouble with, I think. Right. Out of any of the role-playing, like, I think most people can passably role-play to a certain extent. Like, everyone can, you know, sort of pretend to be a character. You know, everybody grew up, we all played pretend when we were kids. It's not that hard for most people. What is hard is putting that character in a box and making sure that you're not pulling information that the character wouldn't know. Like, you may have every indication from your DM that this is a trap. And in certain instances, like, the DM shouldn't make it so fucking obvious out of character because it's just awkward. But you may have every indication that, yeah, if you go into this tower, something bad is going to happen. But your character doesn't know that. And your character isn't going to be, like, in a position to make that decision.
Yeah, like, for a quick example, it would be like, you're playing Smashnard, you know, you're a dwarf, you got a fuckload of, like, axes and spears, and you want to fucking murder this dragon.
You direct them only at people's dicks.
You fucking hate dragons, you know, dragon killed your ma and pa, and more importantly, like, stole all your fucking gold. And so you're like, you know, he's at the top of this tower. Your dude's not gonna be like, you know, he's not gonna be like, well, this is obviously a trap, so I'm going to have to go, you know, do all this other stuff. Like, if your character's like, if you're playing Grognard, the dick smasher, he's going to be more gung-ho about just going into the tower or whatever. Right. He's not going to think, okay, let me roll a, let me go through, look at all these traps, check every stone. No, he's going to go up there and smash him in the dick.
Right. He doesn't give a shit.
This is also something in combat.
Yes.
People drop role-playing in combat at the drop of a hat, and it bothers me. Like,
see, I find it more fun to do role-play in the combat, like, swoosh it in there. Like, when we had the big boss fight.
Yeah, you don't stop being your character when combat starts.
Like, oh shit, you know, all of our friends are in that burning house. I'll be right back. It's a terrible idea to go into that burning house, and, like, metagame knowledge, probably fine. But I'm going to do that because it's what my character would do.
Right.
It's like, probably the biggest problem I have with 4E, if I had to pick, like, my biggest problem with 4E, is that there's a very sharp divide between combat and not combat, which tends to exacerbate this problem. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You don't stop role-playing when combat starts.
Yeah, this is, like, this is the very legitimate complaint with 4E. But I find that it's, you know, it's less of a system thing. Like, most of the problems that I have with 3.5 are less the actual physical mechanics and more the way that people deal with it. You can still roleplay your character in combat. You can still do that sort of stuff. But I have a very good example of using character knowledge and player knowledge where they should be separate.
Yeah.
Which is any given insight, you know, call somebody's bluff check. People do this all the time, where you go up to somebody and you say, hey, person at the door, is so-and-so inside? And the guard says, ain't nobody inside. And he goes, I'm going to roll a insert skill from game that is, you know, finding out the truth. And they roll a 2, right? And then you go, yeah, he seems like he's telling the truth. And this motherfucker immediately goes, okay, I'm going to break in. Because I think he's in there. It's just like, right, like, if your character actually valued the word of that guard enough to go, is he in here? And you were going to base your evidence on that, you have to abide by it.
Spoilers for Revival here, but I have a perfect situation for this. Spoilers for I think, when was this? At 14? Episode 14
maybe?
Of Revival?
It was post Uriel, So it was about 13, 14.
Yeah, yeah, 13, 14. When Elias talks to Red.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know for sure. Out of character, I know for sure Red's lying to me. I know it. I know for sure he's lying. 100%. I'm 100% convinced that Red is lying to my face, but Elias has absolutely no reason to not believe anything that Red said. None. He has
right.
He has no reason not to believe him, and so I can't be like, nah, I don't believe you anyway.
Right, because what this does so many times is it invalidates other people's actions.
Yeah.
This is the time when you roll, you're like, oh, I'm going to roll perception and see if there's any traps in here. And you go, you know, perception roll, everything looks clear. Like, this place is, there are no marks anywhere. And the guy's still like, okay, I'm going to tiptoe around everywhere. And you're like, okay, there is a trap you didn't see. Roll down. He's like, but I was being careful for the traps that you didn't see. Yeah, yeah. No. Try again next time. But the way that you can deal with this is very, very simply just telling people when they do it, your character wouldn't know that.
Yeah.
This one is really just you tell people at the start of the game, keep character knowledge and player knowledge separate, and give them the examples of how to stop doing that. But going back to the topic of how you engage the guy that's unaware, who is usually going to be doing this sort of thing, the way that you engage this guy is in a couple of ways. You can either try and make their character important and make them somebody that the rest of the party needs to interact with, or that the rest of the party wants to interact with. Like,
yeah.
You know, make them some sort of important figure. Make them something that, you know, the rest of the party needs around. And that'll help them feel more engaged if every 2 seconds people are turning to him and trying to talk to him. This can backfire if they're really adamant about not actually playing.
That's what I was going to say is, the problem with this is, There's two flavors of this guy. One of them is salvageable, one of them is not.
Yeah.
The first flavor is, I'm not engaged because I'm not having fun. Like, nothing interesting is going on. I don't really feel the need to be here, you know? Nobody's talking to my character, nobody's doing anything with my character that's interesting to me. I'm just kind of, blah. That person you can salvage by engaging them, giving them stuff to do. Cool
yeah.
things can happen to that guy. The other one is, my friends dragged me along, I don't really want to play.
Yeah, yeah, that guy. But for the first guy, you can give him, like, a fun familiar that talks to him or something. It's, like, constantly bringing them into the conversation. You can do stuff to bring them in and get them interested, but you have to see if anything works. For the second guy, though, the best way that I think to get around this guy is to let them do what they do. If you have fun when they, like, the couple of times that they show up, like, if they're one of those people that, you know, like, when they're actually there and when they're actually, you know, like, when they decide to hop in, it's fun, then give them a character that works with that. Give them some guy who isn't around all the time. Have them be, you know, the scout. Have them be some guy who can jump in and out as needed, where if he's off in the other room on the phone, you don't have to wait for him to come back.
Yeah, it is possible. It's more work, but it is possible to have games that have variable numbers of people.
Yeah.
You don't actually have to have a full quote-unquote party all the time. There have been times when you could do drop in, drop out. It's freeform. You could do whatever you want.
Right.
As long as, like, you make it work.
You can very easily have a guy who's, you know, like, maybe he's a sentient sword, and whenever the dude isn't in the room, he's just a regular sword.
Yeah. I mean, there's a million ways you can get creative.
There's a million ways you can do it. Now, the one guy that's how you deal with that guy. This guy, though, is the problem player that is a problem no matter the frequency, and is the hardest to deal with. And that is an unfortunate pun that I just made, but it's Creepy Dave.
Creepy Dave.
It's, hey guys, I made my character. Do you want to see this art I got of him? And then he shows you just, like, some night elf chick with tits the size of watermelons. And just, like, and you're just like, yeah, this is the character that I'm going to be playing. Yeah. I need to go to the bathroom real quick.
She's an ex-prostitute.
Basically, you're playing with Shad, man.
Yes.
God, yeah. Yes, yes.
Yes, basically, you're playing with that guy. The creepy motherfucker who cannot go 10 minutes without being a creepy, awkward motherfucker. This is the person that if you have any girls in your group, they will run screaming.
Rightly so.
Yes. This is the dude who, the first time I met one of these guys, within 5 minutes of meeting him, said, I DM too. I gave one of our rangers a bonus shoes dildos. And then on another occasion with one of my friends, the first time they met them was they went to a movie with some mutual friends. And there was like some DreamWorks movie and they had one of those like stick your head through the cutout and take a picture as one of the characters. And they're all making that DreamWorks face. But he just walks up to this person he has known for all of 10 minutes and goes, heh, I wonder how many people have used that cutout as a glory hole. It's that guy.
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ.
It's that guy. Dude. Everybody knows one of these dudes. Everybody knows one of these dudes.
When you say the phrase, oh, man, it's like, oh, that guy's here.
Dare you enter my magical realm?
He's the guy that makes everything weird just by being there. This is the guy who is going to... He's going to make problems by doing weird shit. And, like, the best way that you can deal with him is talk to him and be like, dude, stop being so fucking weird. Or just kick him the fuck out. There's really no other in-between. Like, with a lot of these other things, you can tolerate it. But if somebody is making things genuinely physically uncomfortable for the rest of the players, they need to go.
Yeah. I mean, there's just no getting around that. Like, as soon as somebody is, like, seriously making people uncomfortable, like, you don't want to be around them, they either need to knock it off and never knock it back on, or they need to leave.
Right. This is the guy that... Like, if you ever walk away from a game feeling like you need to take a shower or call the cops, you know that you got Creepy Dave with you.
Yeah, he's the wizard.
If you're thinking about calling in an anonymous tip because you think he might have people chained up in his basement, you have Creepy Dave.
If there's golden pissy trees as far as the eye can pee, you got Creepy Dave.
And if Creepy Dave is the guy running the game, run.
Run.
But like there are very few ways that you can get around this, because this one, like with all of the other ones we've said, there's ways to get around it, there's ways as the player to get around it, but for this, like if this is the guy who, like, and it doesn't even need to be weird sexual stuff, this can be the guy who's like really too into describing how his character cuts people in half or shit, like he, you know, like the guy who's like, I'm gonna stab this guy and like make a like start turning the knife and then like jab my thumb in the hole, like, ah, and he's just like, dude, I wonder how many people has this guy killed in real life? Not has he, I know that for a fact that he has. that guy is also Creepy Dave.
I assume that somewhere out there there's like a negaverse of DMs and D&D players who are giving this exact same podcast, but they're in the Creepy Dave-iverse.
Yeah.
So if you get a player who's like, all right, you know, I roll, I hit him with a crossbow, and then doesn't go on to explain, like, what he's sticking in the hole, like, get that dude out of here. He's a fucking buzzkill.
Like, honestly, what the game is about is creativity, and if you aren't shoving something in there, you're doing it wrong. I'm sorry. Yeah, that definitely has to exist. There's got to be
there's
some people.
There's a reason why the gamer food that we have is like hot dogs and Cheetos.
Yeah,
Jesus
but,
Christ.
So the thing with the player versus GM dynamic is that so often it boils down to what people say is like it turns into an us versus them situation with mm-hmm. the DM and the players or the players and the DM. and each one thinks that the other is the problem. And in this episode, we're mostly talking about the players, but so often these character archetypes and the problem players are made by the DMs.
See what thine hands hath wrought.
Right? If you're, like, for example, if you don't give the players enough information in world to go off of, they're going to start metagaming. If you throw things that are way too hard at the players for a reasonable character to build, they're going to start being munchkins. If you don't engage the players at all, they're going to start murder hoboing. If, you know, if you only throw in-character roleplay situations at people, and, you know, like, are, you know, barely roll dice at all, then the guy playing a Thrandir Thrill is going to be super happy and everybody else is going to be ordering pizza.
If your plot sucks, they're going to go want to do something else.
And if you describe every female character and immediately say, and also breasts, banging, you're going to have Creepy Dave. Like, Creepy Dave could be sitting in wait. Like, he could be sitting dormant, and then you just start describing weird shit that he's into, and he's like, oh boy, now's my chance.
There's a reason that that I don't allow animal ear girl kingdoms or races in any of the games that I play in, because it's just not going to end well. It's just, you have entered my magical realm, and whatever character concept I had is gone out the window.
Right?
There are fluffy tails, and I must touch them.
Oh, that would be a good place to end, but we actually forgot to talk about murder hobos.
Oh, did we?
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Yeah, we can, okay, we're continuing the after the credits thing. So, hey, you might have been listening to the ending song and realized that there was still like 10 minutes left. It's because we forgot about murder hobos. I'm looking at the show notes, we forgot about murder hobos. Michael, what's a murder hobo?
Murder hobo is somebody who builds a really basic character, and they have a really normal plot line, normal everything about their motivation is completely normal. It's like Jeff, and he is an adventurer hero. He's a hero, mind you. He's not an evil character, just a normal guy. And then as soon as he gets into a town, he sees somebody with some shiny things on his wrist, fucking kills him. The guards come. You're like, hey, you can't do that. He fucking tries to kill the guards. He starts taking all their stuff. And you're like, dude, why are you doing this? He's like, I just want gold.
Right. These are the guys. I was in a game once that fell apart very quickly. And we were going to be this big, powerful guild. And we were supposed to all be like enterprising businessmen. And we were trying to like hire people to do stuff for us. And then the caravan loaded with a bunch of goods that we were going to, like our wagon filled with a bunch of goods that we were going to go sell at market, gets attacked by some goblins, and we fight the goblins. And then the goblins have some garbage crossbows made from trash and dirt, and two of the players immediately rush for the dirt crossbow and start fighting over who gets the dirt crossbow. And I'm like, I'm sitting on a pile of money right now. That dirt crossbow is worth less than one of my strands of hair. And these guys are like in character rolling against each other to fight each other for this crossbow.
They're also the person who searches every single corpse of every single creature and monster for whatever, like, lint might be in their pockets, regardless of the character. Generally speaking, murder hobos are people who played RPGs before they ever played a role-playing game, like a real, like a D&D or something, and they're used to getting loot.
Yeah.
So, like, you kill five goblins, and then you get 200 gold. And then when you're playing D&D, you kill five goblins. And they're like, okay, so where's the gold? And you're like, they're goblins. They don't fucking have gold.
That's why they're attacking you, idiot.
They're like, I'm going to go search their corpses. You're like, you're a heroic adventurer. You're going to go, like, strip some goblin corpses? They're covered in blood and guts. You're going to go strip some goblin corpses to find their stuff? You're like, yeah, I want their stuff.
Yeah, you're a disgraced noble from an honorable household, and you've got your butler with you here, and you're wearing this like nice suit because you're a super cool guy, and you're gonna go up to this goblin wearing a burlap sack and a crossbow made out of a garbage can lid, and you're just gonna start rifling through his pockets
for like the three coppers he had that he was going to use to buy like bread later.
Yeah.
to buy goblin milk for his 400 children.
Yeah, so the thing with the murder hobo is they see everything as reward. They see a town and they see there are buildings with stuff in them. I can go take those things. They see people and they go, they have money. I can take that money. They see a monster and they go, it's a monster. I can go fight it right now. They're seeing things like they're in Skyrim or something, and they're just going around killing everything, looting everything, and they have no character identity.
Yeah, they're basically a zombie. I mean, they don't really exist as a character. The character exists as an avatar for them to kill shit.
Right. And this usually shows up. The thing is that DMs usually complain about this character. They complain about these characters all the time. They go, I have a plot and, you know, it's super interesting, but my players are just murder hobos. And what I found to be more often the case than not is that the players are being murder hobos because they have nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Generally, like, speaking, murder hobos want rewards. They want to get stuff for doing things. And if you throw, like, boring encounters at them where it's like, well, we're going to be caravan guards and you're each going to get 100 gold for protecting the caravan as it goes to the next city. And they do that and they get to the next city and nothing happens.
Right. Like, they get no recognition. Nothing happens. You know, they go off and do some big thing and then somebody else shows up, like your cool DM PC shows up and steals all the glory. The players are going to act out.
I think a lot of this problem with murder hobos comes from DMs who use gold as a primary reward system.
Like, yes.
If you're rewarding your characters with just gold for completing quote-unquote quests, you're doing it wrong. Like, in general, you're doing it wrong. Because you're tying, you're making a psychological link and an in-game link of the reward is gold. Gold is good. I want gold. So if you have this caravan and they're protecting the caravan and the guy pays them 200 gold, they're like, that's it? Well, if all they're getting is gold and gold is a reward, then they're just going to want to kill the caravan guy and take his gold.
Right. And usually as well, it's a lot of it is the players acting out from a perceived lack of control.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you don't make player characters important. This is what happens when the player characters don't get to be the cool guys. This is what happens when they don't get to be the heroes. This is what happens when, you know, they go into some big dungeon to go find a thing and somebody else already found it. Or they go, you know, like they go to go rescue somebody and then they're getting their ass kicked and then your cool NPC comes up and saves them. That's when you get the
murder. This is what happens when the DM thinks his setting is cooler than the people playing in it.
Right. Like, for example, let's say that you're having them go rescue somebody from a tower, right? And they're getting their asses handed to them, and then this super cool guy with, like, super powerful magic comes in and saves all of them and goes, my name is Dave, who is also the name of the DM. Is like, I'm super cool, and I'm here to help you guys. You know what's going to happen? They're going to kill Dave.
Yeah, Dave's fucking dead.
They hate Dave. They hate Dave so much. It doesn't matter that he's super nice to them. It doesn't matter that he bakes them pancakes immediately after. They hate him because they want to be the cool guys.
Yeah. This leads into the DM problems because I would say like a solid 80% of murder hobos are made by bad DMs.
Right. This is what happens when your plot isn't good enough. This is what happens when your world isn't interesting enough. You get people who are bored. But you do also just get the people who are maybe new to role-playing, or they're very, very set in their ways and they just want to do quests because as adventurers and get rewards. And if you try and do anything else, they're just going to be like, yeah, but what do I do for the quest? And
yeah, I mean, there's always going to be players like that, and there's always going to be people who want to play that kind of game, and that's why you talk about it beforehand and say, hey, this is the kind of game that we're going to do, and this is the kind of thing that I want to run, and then you ask if they're okay with that.
Right, and this, and what you can do for the murder hobo is you can funnel their actions, you make their actions meaningful, right? Like, you know, let's say, like, it doesn't matter that they set out to be, like, this sort of weird hero. If everybody suddenly sees, like, this super rich guy driving by, and they're like, that guy looks loaded, let's go rob him, right? Go with it. They aren't heroes anymore. That plan, the whole plan that you had about the meeting with the king and going on some big quests, throw it away. Not going to work anymore. You know, what DMs love to do in that situation is they get captured by the guards and then they get brought in front of the king. And then you go, I see you did X against the law thing. So now as a punishment, go and do this quest. This is definitely not me as the DM talking to you and telling you to stay in line.
Which is exactly what you would have met with me to talk about before and done made to do anyway.
Right. Instead, fuck that shit. They're going to go rob that caravan? Let them. You know, they go rob him, they get all this money, they fight the guards, and then, you know, maybe some other thieves bust out of the woods and come save those guys. And then they, you know, like, you go back into the woods, they're like, that was crazy. I can't believe you robbed that guy. Like, that guy was like, we were scoping out that target for months, and you just went in there? You're super cool. We want to be your bandit bros.
And then a rival band of caravan thieves from the neighboring country comes up and says, hey, this is our fucking turf. We're not going to have anybody shit on our caravan robbing.
And now you've got fucking gang wars. And boom, there you go.
And then, you know, like a couple of months after that, you have some group of adventurers, right, come after them. And they're like, we got sent here by the king. I'm going to take you guys down. You're like, you're wanted. And then the players go, oh, shit, like the king sent people after us. Awesome. You can get these players invested in things. Or, and like, even if you want to go like, oh, I wanted to play this more heroic game, there are ways to make them still the heroes. You can give them outs to be the good guys. You can go like, oh yeah, that, you know, like that guy that you robbed, he was a terrible person, you know? Like, you know, like you have him rob him and you find all, like, you find, you know, like, papers and stuff saying that he was screwing people over, all of his money was stolen, and then you're like, they're fucking Robin Hoods now, right? You
maybe
can still make them
the
good guys. Hiring
caravan robbers to attack certain caravans, and you know, he's got a whole conspiracy going on to keep the price of goods high, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you can make this stuff still work. So much of murder hoboing being a problem comes down to the DM not being willing to think on their feet and still make the game work.
Yeah, if your players all collectively get up... here's a situation that happens a lot. Let's say you've got this whole plot planned out. You want... There's a Doom... Death Mountain. Definitely not Mount Doom. They've got a Cursed Dagger. Definitely not the One Ring. That you've told them... that a wise wizard, definitely not Gandalf, has told them needs to be thrown into this volcano that is, again, not Mount Doom, to be destroyed once and for all. And I'm, again, the dagger is not the One Ring. It's completely different. Because this isn't Middle Earth. I'm just saying, it's not Middle Earth.
Okay? And then they've got a little pet called Gaums.
Upper Galadriel.
Yeah. It's not
called
Middle
Gaums,
Earth.
Who follows them around, and he tells them where to go, but he's not Smaug. He's not Gollum. And the dragon isn't Smaug.
Yeah, it's not. Nope, not Middle-earth.
Nope, not at all.
During all of this exposition, your players are bored out of their minds because they just don't appreciate your amazing setting. Obviously.
Obviously.
You mentioned in passing, as your players are walking through the city, which is definitely not Gondor, because my setting is interesting and unique. An airship flies by. It's on two. It's got two balloons.
I want that airship. I want it.
No, you can't. You have to go to Mount Doom. I mean, not
fuck you. Fuck you. I'm getting some ropes. I'm making a grappling hook. I'm getting on that airship.
You can't. Okay, guys. Let's stay on topic. Guys.
I'm already climbing up to the airship.
No, you can't.
I've killed the captain of the airship. This is my airship now. I'm wearing his hat. See, we're just gonna drop the dagger into the volcano and then go do airship shit.
See, and in this situation, because you're a shit DM, you're going to yell at them for ignoring your totally awesome plot, when what you should have said was, oh, what you should have picked up on is, everybody wants to be airship captains. They want to roam the high air. The high clouds.
Your game is Firefly now. Deal with it.
Yeah. Deal with it. Like, your players have shown you what they want to do. Go with it.
Oftentimes, it's better than what you had planned.
Yeah.
The best games come from this. The best games come from this. Where you had a plot planned, you had an arc, and then your players just go, what if we just did this cool thing instead? And you can either respond with, no, that's stupid. You guys are stupid. Fuck you. I've got my plan. You're going to get back on the plot road. Or you can go with it. Like, yeah. For example, I've got a great actual one that happened. There was this whole thing, you know, like we had to cross an ocean with our party to go talk to some people about a thing, and nobody really cared that much. Like, we cared because it was, like, the main plot, but at one point, we had a psychic in our team, and he always wore a skull mask. And we were crossing, and totally not Pirates of the Caribbean happened, where there were a bunch of ghost ships with a bunch of skeleton pirates, right?
Yeah.
And we were like, this is awesome. You know, like, we're all swinging from ropes, taking out skeleton crews. But then the psychic guy just goes up. He's like, which one is the lead ship? And he's like, okay, it's that one. And he goes over. He's like, I'm going to go up to the lead ship. I'm going to kill the captain of this whole group of pirates. I'm going to take his hat. I'm wearing a skeleton mask. I'm going to pretend to be a skeleton and become the new leader of the pirates.
Hell yeah.
And so he rolls like the, you know, he rolls the diplomacy, like the intimidate thing, and just nat 20s like three times in a row, right? And so everybody else was on board with, fuck yeah, we have a crew of skeleton pirates with us now. This is the coolest thing ever, right? Like, we're going to use this forever now. Like, we're still going to go down the main plot and stuff, but we're going to do it via skeleton pirates.
Yeah,
it's like when you're playing Scribblenauts and you find out you could solve every puzzle with a helicopter and a piece of rope. Like, we could then solve every problem with a shit ton of skeleton pirates, and it was rad. But the DM did not like this, and he was like, "Oh, you guys, like, as the you know, the overcast stormy sky clears, the ghost pirate ships start to disappear. Fuck you."
Yeah, DMs, bad DMs tend to get upset when players pull one over them.
Yeah, like, he wasn't, like, a bad DM, but he had his plot and he wanted to stick to it. And so, like, we still very much enjoyed that game, but we knew, okay, he has his plot, right? Like, we were fine with playing the game for that plot, but we knew that we weren't going to get to do, you know, super crazy out of the, like, wacky outside the box stuff. But the game can be so good when you allow that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's definitely... Like, you want to take advantage of and not discourage your players' creativity.
That basically does it for the players. But here, a little quick aside and leading into what we're going to be doing next time is how to deal with, like, more intricate situations involving how to actually run your game, run your story, and how to keep things running smoothly. Right?
Yeah.
How to build a cool world, how to, you know, make a good plot. Things like that. Like the real meat and potatoes. But
you use that phrase so goddamn much.
Do I?
It makes me laugh every time. Just the real meat and potatoes.
I'm avoiding this meat and potatoes discussion.
I didn't think I used it that much.
I'm not a part of the meat and potatoes fandom. Okay, so...
We call ourselves Tater Heads.
God fuck.
No, wait, we call ourselves Tater Tots.
No. We don't allow Tater Tots anymore.
This is a strict Spudhead household.
Spudhead.
Not after the incident. A lot of these issues that we're talking about, these are all things that should ideally be dealt with before the game even starts.
Like, yeah.
And these issues are exacerbated by a bad world, a bad setting, a bad plot, bad pacing.
And a bad DM, which is what we're going to get into with the next one. We're going to be talking about some more story building things and the types of DMs.
Yeah.
So just a little quick teaser for that. I'll give you players. Players often have a complaint of, our DM is railroading us too much. Right?
That's probably the number one complaint.
So, how you deal with this, right? And the overwhelming amount of stuff that I've heard is, yeah, our DM is a dick and he just, like, keeps railroading us and he keeps not letting us do cool things. So, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to fuck up his game. No.
Boy, howdy, is that the wrong answer.
What you actually need to do, and I know this is terrifying, I know this is scary for you, is you need to go talk to them.
Horrible.
Right? So, What you need to do is, when you've got that overly restrictive DM, you really do need to just go up to them and be like, hey, we want to actually do more stuff. And we'll get more into how to deal with that guy specifically, the here's my plot and I'm sticking to it, along with some favorites such as the George R. R. Martin, who takes 10 years to describe details that don't matter.
The George R. R. Martin, who kills every NPC you come across.
The George R. R. Martin, who mentions something incredibly important in passing, never mentions it again, and expects you to remember it 17 years later.
Or the George R. R. Martin starts a series and then doesn't fucking finish Game of Thrones, the book series, you ass.
Well, then you've also got the guys who don't describe enough stuff, which is the anti-George R. R. Martin. They're the guys who go, you walk into a room. What do you do? I'm like, boy, howdy, I wonder.
It's just a pure white room. And then the worst part is, for that one, is you say, like, a good creative player will be like, okay, I go take a seat. And then the DM goes, there's no chairs.
Right.
The way you said that, like, there's no chairs, you fucking idiot.
No, that's right. How it always happens. You'll that's be like, I want to do thing, and then the DM goes, but you can't do the thing. You're like, you never fucking told me about that.
Right.
I want to get ye flask. You can't get ye flask.
See, this, I'm pretty sure that we've got a decent amount of people who are listening to this right now, and they're going, God, yeah, you tell them. You tell them. My players, they're all fucking idiots. I'm the best storyteller ever. I'm writing a fantasy novel right now about my world. It's great. It's not going to sell for shit, dick. And you're not as good as you think you are. And we're going to tear into you in the next episode.
You're a bad DM, and everything you do is a mistake. Please enjoy the next episode.
And remember, always remember, no D&D is better than bad D&D.